The New Testament reading is from the letter to the Hebrews, chapter 1, starting at verse 1, and you can find this in the Pew Bibles on page 215. Long ago, God spoke to our ancestors in many and various ways by the prophets, but in these last days he has spoken to us by a Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom he also created the worlds. He is the reflection of God's glory and the exact imprint of God's very being, and he sustains all things by his powerful word. When he had made purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the Majesty on high, having become as much superior to angels as the name he has inherited is more excellent than theirs. For to which of the angels did God ever say, "You are my son, today I have begotten you"? Or again, "I will be his father, and he will be my son"? And again, when he brings the firstborn into the world, he says, "Let all God's angels worship him." Of the angels, he says, "He makes his angels winds and his servants flames of fire." Excuse me. But of the Son, he says, "Your throne, O God, is forever and ever, and the righteous scepter is the scepter of your kingdom. You have loved righteousness and hated wickedness. Therefore, God, your God, has anointed you with the oil of gladness beyond your companions. And in the beginning, Lord, you founded the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you remain. They will all wear out like clothing. Like a cloak, you will roll them up, and like clothing, they will be changed. But you are the same, and your years will never end." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Well, it's a great joy, as I said earlier, to be with you, lovely to be here this morning. As we begin, let me tell you about one of the favourite things I used to do when I was a minister in London before we moved to Oxford was meet people in the parish who were interested in bringing children for baptism. And this one particular visit, I remember very vividly, as this couple invited me and said, "Come and come and chat," and we discussed together. And we had a lovely time. And then just as I was leaving, they said, "I want one more thing, Minister. Could I just ask you to possibly do a favour?" They had a sort of a young baby who they wanted to be baptised, but they also had an older son of about probably 5 or 6. And they said, "Just before you go, we couldn't just prevail upon you, ask a favour. Our son's done a drawing, and I wonder if you could give your opinion on it, please." And I said, I was slightly surprised. It's not generally how baptism visits go, but I said, of course. Sure. And they said, "Yes, because he's done a drawing of God, and we just want if you could check if it's accurate or not." I mean, full sincerity from this couple as they ushered their son in, and he presented me with this picture, and I said, "Oh, well, this is wonderful. I mean, talk me through it." And he said, "Well, there's his cloak." And I said, "What's this here?" He said, "That's his hat, pointy hat. And what's this here he's holding?" "Well, that's his magic wand." And it became pretty clear that I think Harry Potter, and particularly Dumbledore, featured quite largely in the family. As what essentially we had there was a picture. I think there might have even been stars on the cloak. And to be honest, to this day, I can't remember exactly what I said. I think I tried to be as kind of warm and encouraging and, encourage the penmanship. But it's one of those funny things. What is God like? They wanted me to judge this picture, and I guess rather naturally, their 5 or 6 year old took from what was familiar to him and said, well, I presume God, he does miracles, let's call that magic, therefore he's a bit like Dumbledore in Harry Potter. Perhaps in a previous generation, if it had been Lord of the Rings, we'd have got something more akin to that. But it's an important question. How do we know what God is like? Even the fact they asked me, can you evaluate this? Could anyone, I mean, you draw this picture, I draw that picture, someone else draws another picture. How can we evaluate what God is like? How would we ever know? And actually, there's nothing more important than knowing what God is like for our lives, for our understanding of the world, for our understanding of everything. There's no more important question than really what these two parents asked me. Has my son got a right view of God? And I guess the question is posed to all of us here this morning. Have we a right view of God? And again, how would we know? If I were to ask you, how many chairs are there in the vestry? Some of you might know because you've been encountered before the service. It would be an unusual thing to do, but perhaps, I mean, Anglican churches have various strange rules. Maybe you need to count the chairs in the vestry before the service. But I'm guessing people wouldn't know. Someone might. Any suggestions how many chairs in the vestry?
Five.
Do you actually know? Six. We can guess. We need someone from the vestry to come and tell us how many chairs there are. If we've not been and seen, we need someone to... I might send Andrew to check if we have a bit of time later, but we need someone to go and tell us how many there are. And it's like that with God. We couldn't just make it up. We need him to reveal to us. And that's how the letter to the Hebrews begins. Long ago, page 250 in the New Testament, if you'd like to follow along. Long ago, God spoke to our ancestors in many and various ways by the prophets. If you read the Old Testament, you see that. Isaiah saw this glorious vision of God, his robe filling the temple. Actually, God spoke through a donkey in the Old Testament, through writing on a wall, through prophets, through dreams, visions, many and various ways, and glorious and wonderful it was. But actually, even if you read through the Old Testament, it wasn't the whole time. There were times when things were relatively quiet from God. People didn't hear from God until the next prophet came along. Wonderful, but incomplete. Piecemeal. A bit here, a bit there, but not fully. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by a son. Or by his son, we could read it. And what we're going to think about briefly this morning is God speaking to us, God revealing himself to us by his son. And we all know, don't we, that when we're looking up information about, say you want to find out what's going on in the Tory party right now, what's actually happening with Brexit, the place you go for that information is quite important, isn't it? I know there are certain, if I go to a very kind of very right-wing website, I will probably get a slightly different view than if I go to the Socialist Inquirer. We understand that who we get the information from matters because they will have a point of view. Can they be trusted? Again, for the most important question, what is God like? We want someone we can really trust to reveal that to us. And the writer to the Hebrews says God has spoken through his son, and he wants to show us this is someone who can be trusted, who is worth listening to. God has revealed himself to us in his son. And we're going to just notice four things about this son that means it's worth listening to him. We can follow there. He has spoken to us by a son whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom he also created the worlds. The Son, Jesus, is the one who created all things. There's only two types of thing in the world. Ultimately, everything in the world, only two types of thing. Things that have been created and the one who created them. Anything in the world was created by Jesus. And actually, he's the heir of all things. They were created for him as well. What it means is this: he made everything and so he can explain everything. He made everything, and so he can explain everything. Some people think that God is only limited to what happens between 10 and 11 a.m. on a Sunday morning. Perhaps candles and organs and angels and praying, those are God things. Everything else belongs to, well, not God. He's not interested in those. But no, Jesus made all things, which means he can explain all things. He knows the best way to do all things. And wonderfully, he speaks to us of all things for our good. I heard the story of a jewellery shop in Australia, a very high-end jewellery shop. And one day a man came in, he wanted to buy a ring, and this ring was stunning. It was exquisite, it was vastly expensive. This glorious ring. And the person serving sort of took the ring and started to try and put it through the till, and the computer system was failing. And you can imagine the nervousness, because this ring, this was a sale that the person in the shop did not want to lose. And so fiddling with the computer, trying to get this thing to restart and reset. And the man said, can I give you a hand with that? And she said, no, don't worry, it's fine, I'll keep going. And she struggled. And he said, I'm quite good with computers. Honestly, I think I can sort this for you. She said, no, don't worry. And kind of sort of 10 slightly awkward minutes, eventually things got going, and she took the payment. The man left, and as she looked down at the signature, she saw Bill Gates, and realised the man she had been refusing help from for 10 to 15 minutes on this computer was the man who had designed the system, who he had made it. He knew how to fix it because he made it. And how much more Jesus, who made all things, he knows how to use them properly. He even knows how to fix them when they break. And, I mean, this poor shop assistant, how were they to know? How were they to know this was Bill Gates? But how tragic if we hear God speak to us and think, I'm going to refuse the Maker's instructions and do things my own way. No, the Son made all things, so he can explain all things. He knows the best way to handle our marriages, our parenting, our future plans, our money, our dreams, our ambitions, how we view ourselves. He knows the best way for all of these things, and he wants us to enjoy and flourish in them all. He made everything, so he explains everything. Secondly, he's the reflection of God's glory and the exact imprint of God's very being. He's a reflection, or could be radiance, of God's glory, a bit like a sun shining, this kind of glory coming from the sun, like beams of light. Jesus is the reflection of God's glory, the exact imprint of God's very being. That means if you want to know what God is like, look at Jesus and you see exactly. The imprint word, it's like a stamp. My daughter's very into her craft. And occasionally we'll sort of on a Saturday morning go down to Hobbycraft, just in Oxford, and you can buy all these different stamps. And they have the different pictures. It'll be fish and stars and rainbows and different things. And you take the stamp, you dip it in ink, and then you stamp it on the paper. And if she shows me the imprint, the mark on the paper, I know what the stamp looks like, because the stamp gives an exact mark, exact copy. If I want to know what the stamp looks like, I can see the imprint. Jesus is the imprint of God's very being. Again, that question, how would we know what God was like? Pretty hard. I mean, imagining how many chairs in the vestry. I mean, some of us have been in there. But if you haven't ever been in there, how can you imagine? How much more could we imagine what God, the creator of the universe, is like if we've never seen him? And so he came to earth so we could know. So we could answer that question, what is God like? We didn't just need to dream up Dumbledore or I like to think of God as. He made himself known in Jesus. And that is wonderful news. We're not We're not fumbling around in the dark anymore. If we want to know what God is like, he's made himself known in Jesus. God has come into our room. We don't need to imagine what is out there. He has come in. The Son is the imprint of God's very being. Thirdly, he sustains all things by his powerful word. I think sometimes it might be tempted to think, okay, God created the world, but maybe he just wound it up like a clockwork mouse or something, or a clockwork toy, wound it up and then let it go, and then he sits back uninvolved. But the picture here is Jesus sustains all things by his powerful word. I do remember a few years ago when we had an eclipse of the sun. I don't know if people, obviously we weren't supposed to look at it directly, but you could kind of get a shadow on a paper. But the thing I remember was not so much trying to see the eclipse. I can't remember exactly what we did, but what I remember was the temperature drop. Does anyone remember that? That's what surprised me. I think I was kind of ending up there looking at a little circle on a bit of paper, gradually getting smaller and then bigger, thinking, well, this was a bit of a waste of time. But it wasn't the seeing, it was just realizing that the sun was just momentarily obscured by the moon, yet the temperature dropped. Suddenly you could feel it wouldn't need that happen for too long and life would just start to wither. And the sun is necessary for things to grow and flourish. And so Jesus sustains all things actively, involved, personally. Every atom, every molecule is there because Jesus sustains it. I don't know if you remember those old, before the days of plasma screens, the old TV sets, where when you turned it, it was sort of, you know, the cathode ray tube. When you turned it off, suddenly it all just kind of quickly shrank to a dot in the middle. It went, kind of turned it off and go, and then disappear. And just for a second, you had the sort of just the residual image, and then it was gone. And that's what the universe would be like if Jesus stopped sustaining it, just gone. Not a God who's distant, not a God who's just wound up the universe, but purposefully and wonderfully, personally sustaining all things. It's the difference between if I sort of am carrying shopping, perhaps. Even worse, if I'm carrying my wife's handbag while she's doing something, and sort of I carry it in a very impersonal way, sort of slightly at a distance. I don't want people to think that this is my bag, because that's not quite my style. So I sort of carry it, but in a slightly impersonal way. That's very different to when my daughter was young and we were taking her down the street and I was holding her hand and guiding her and making sure she didn't wander into the road or hit someone or stumble into anything. I was leading her. I was taking her. I was personally and purposefully involved in what was going on. That's what Jesus is doing with the universe. He cares about it. And did you notice how he's sustaining it? He sustains all things by his powerful word. How did God create the world? He spoke. Let there be light, and there was light. My words have some power. I think I could just about get away with saying, Andrew, my throat's a bit dry, please could I have a drink? And he might well go, my throat isn't dry, but if I said that, he might well go to the back and fetch me a drink. My words have some power, but God speaks, let there be light. And with no intermediary, it just happened. His words have instant power, and he sustains all things by his words. And it's so often said we live in an image culture, and to a large extent we do. We undervalue words, I think. And it can be so tempting. Perhaps some of us have had a book like this in our hands for years and years, decades and decades, and it can be easy to think, well, they're just words. Maybe like that book in the glove box. Okay, there might come a time when my brake light's gone and I need to work out how do I get a new. There might be a time I open it, but really fairly lifeless, dull, just words. But Hebrews says, no, the same words that created the universe, the same words that uphold the universe, God speaks to us today. Actually, when in Hebrews, when the writer quotes from the other parts of the Bible, he says, as the Holy Spirit says, present tense, says to us today. And I think we just, I need to keep reminding myself of the power of God's word. If I think, can I ever change? Can I ever grow in the Christian life? Maybe if I think, can I ever really know God properly? Maybe if I ever wonder, can I ever speak to my non-Christian friends who are so intelligent and have life so sorted? Could I ever speak to them? Would that ever have any impact? I need to think, well, if through words God could create a universe and sustain a universe, then through words he can build his people. He can comfort the brokenhearted. He can uplift and encourage. He can correct and rebuke. He can even bring people to faith in Jesus Christ through words. And I think that perspective vastly transforms what we do, what we think we're doing on a Sunday morning. Andrew's question, why do we help people teach the Bible? Because God powerfully works through his word. When God speaks, things happen. God's words are living and active. And finally, only hinted at, the rest of Hebrews will major on this theme, but there at the end of verse 3, when he, the Son, had made purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the Majesty on high. Jesus' words are so important because, as I said, they speak to us of really vital truth, particularly he made purification for sins. Jesus' words explain the universe. Jesus' words reveal who God is. Jesus' words are powerful. And Jesus' words tell us how to be forgiven. They tell us about his work that we've sung about, his work on the cross of achieving forgiveness. I remember I was leading an inquiries group at my old church, and there were about six or seven of us gathered around the table every Tuesday evening for a few weeks. And I have to say, this one lady, she intimidated me. She was a Mancunian businesswoman. She was sharp. She was on the ball. She was no nonsense. And I thought, to this bright, intelligent woman, am I really just going to explain words from the Bible? And I confess, I shouldn't have, but I felt intimidated. But we were talking these things through, and as we looked through Mark's Gospel, I remember distinctly when we came to this understanding of salvation not being about the good things that I do, but about what God has done. In other words, not me trying to earn my way to God, but accepting the forgiveness Christ won on the cross and simply trusting him. I distinctly remember, and she just said, you would never guess that, would you? She said, you'd never know that unless you read it here. You'd never think that's how it worked. And that's true. We would never come up with an idea. We would assume, perhaps like in the world of business, you only get out what you put in. The strong, the successful, the competent, they thrive. We'd never know, actually, the way to eternal bliss is not through what I do, my own effort, my self-improvement, but through Christ's work paying for sins. The Bible teaches of that. And she became a Christian, this woman, and she was not lacking intelligence, competence, street savvy. It was not that she was a weak person, far from it, but she understood that salvation was through what Jesus had done. And so, how can we know what God is like? How can we understand the world? How can we understand the most pressing truths of how to be saved? Well, we look at Jesus. Jesus reveals God, and Jesus is revealed in the Scriptures. And so, let me conclude by words spoken by God the Father to his Son at the Transfiguration. When the heavens were opened, and God spoke to his Son and said this, "This is my Son, whom I love. Listen to him." Amen.